Welcome to the Out of Spec Podcast. This is episode 10. We made it to the double digits. I am joined by Mike Breeling, Ben Spreen, and my brother Austin Schieffer, and we are going to talk about cars, as you knew. We're going to talk about car shows. Talk about the new Subaru WRX, look at Zero's minor updates to their older models, and much, much more. So let's jump right in. But first, we actually have a sponsor. And they are called EV Wash. I don't know if you guys have heard of them at all, but they are kind of, targeting the EV crowd, mostly because of the, eco-friendly nature. So the thing about EV Wash is they have actually aluminum bottles, and they are refillable. So you can actually reuse the bottles over and over again. They give you like a wash kit, and then they have these biodegradable, basically paper bags of the solution, the interior cleaner, the waterless wash, and the glass cleaner. You can refill your bottle and use it over and over again. It's actually a really nice bottle. I've actually been using it to clean Kyle's Tesla pretty dramatically. Pictures to come in just a bit. But yeah, give them a look. And they actually plant one tree per bottle or pouch sold, which is pretty awesome. So get the EV wash kit. Comes in that cool bag you can keep in your car. So thanks to our sponsors who support us, and use the code out of spec, capital O, capital O, capital S, out of spec 30 for 30% off a wash kit. All right, let's jump into some cars. First, what have we been driving? I think, Mike, I recall you saying you've driven a Taycan recently.
Yeah, so this past week I had the chance to finally get behind the wheel of a Taycan. I was super excited. It's a car I've been wanting to drive for a long time, but usually the local dealer near us sells every single one of them before they even come off the truck, so have not really had an opportunity until this past weekend. And it was only about maybe like 15, 20 minutes of seat time, but it was enough to get an initial impression of the vehicle based off what I experienced and heard from others who have driven it. And the one that I drove, I actually think I have a really bad potato picture of it on my Twitter because it was actually in a car show. And then we were able to drive it afterward because it was the last day of the show. But it was a 2021 Taycan Turbo in chalk over the black leather interior with the carbon fiber accents and the sweet Mission E wheels. Really, really good spec car. And honestly, for a first time experience at Taycan, a great one to experience. Full air suspension, Porsche dynamic chassis control, four wheel steering, which is something that I've never actually got to experience driving any car before. This bit of sticker shock. I mean, it was like $185,000, which is not a little amount of money, but I completely understand why people buy a Taycan. The build quality, the acceleration of this car is pretty insane. I mean, I have driven and been in P100 DLs. I've not driven a Plaid. I think this car is just as fast as those P100 DLs. And it has what's also called Porsche like sport sound. So you kind of can hear it like rev up, and then there's almost like a gear change because all Taycans, I believe all of them, have a two-speed gearbox. So it's kind of unique in the electric car sense that there is a bit of theater about it when you're stomping on that accelerator. Even when you're coming down and decelerating into a turn, you can kind of almost hear like downshifts when it shifts back down into that first gear. And with the Porsche Dynamic Chassis Control, or PDDC, this car has a lot of acronyms to it, like all Porsches, it stays extremely flat in the curves. What's even better is on the OLED display that's in front of the driver, you can actually bring up a graph showing you how hard the that Dynamic Chassis Control is working as you turn right or left. It's pretty interesting to watch. And then the four-wheel steering, I have never driven a car with four-wheel steering on it, ever. And it makes a world of difference. Honestly, on a sports car like this or a sporty electric car, it would be hard to own without four-wheel steering after experiencing it. As you turn, you can feel the rear end come around and just like it's sliding around you. It's a very weird feeling. I think it's something you all should get to experience. Definitely eye-opening for me, because I've heard Ben talk about four-wheel steering a lot, and Kyle in the cars that they've both driven. But for me, this was the first time, and even at low speed, so we did have to go around a traffic circle, you can feel it making the turning radius of the car even a little tighter. It's just a very, very cool technology. But blown away by the build quality, as I should be. I mean, it is a Porsche, so top-notch materials, top-notch build quality. Car was very solid, unlike a lot of the other big name Tesla that's out there. Their cars, to me, are still not that solid. You can push on everything in this car, and there's no creaks, there's no rattles. Very impressed with the Taycan. Super glad I got to experience it, even for the brief time that I was able to drive it. But I totally want one. I can never afford one, way too expensive. And as soon as I got home from driving this car, the first thing I did was try and build like a base model rear wheel drive, and it's still like $100,000. So
you don't need a house.
Yeah. You can live in this car. I mean, it is one thing that I've always been surprised about Taycans is how tiny they are in person. Like I always, mm-hmm. in pictures, I kind of felt like they're a big car, but we know you can kind of see that guy over there standing next to it. I mean, it's a pretty low car. And in this picture, it's actually slammed on the air suspension, which is good.
Yeah. I mean, when you see it next to a Panamera, I feel like that really highlights how much smaller the Taycan is comparatively speaking. It's not even that much smaller. It's just slimmer in like every way. Yeah. To where I see a Panamera now and I'm like, ew, gross. Unless it's the,
like, is that a Macan?
Yeah. Unless it's like the wagon version, but that's a gorgeous spec. Mm. I actually still don't like those wheels, but the chalk color.
Chalk is wonderful.
There was a Carrera at a car meet I went to this past weekend in chalk, and it was like, he just got it like a week ago. It was stunning, especially at sunset. That's so awesome.
The, yeah. What's funny is we were actually driving this car out of this convention center, and nobody looked at the Audi R8 that was near us. Everyone looked at this car driving by, probably mainly because of the weird noise it kept making, because we had the sport Porsche sport sound on. So it was definitely a head turner for sure.
So does the Porsche sport sound make turbo noises too? Because I mean, it is a turbo, right? Yes, nobody's heard Porsche's that one.
Naming. Yeah. Oh yeah.
If only it made little blow off noises, that would be pretty exciting. That would be so funny. What I will say about the wheels on these cars is this is just that wheel design. You get in different finishes. If you get it in all black, it looks really good. Or if you get it in the satin gray, it looks amazing. That's really what should happen.
Is that white in that, or is it a matched chalk? I can't really tell from this picture.
If you don't option anything on the Mission E wheels, they're going to be black spokes, and then the silver, like metallic silver, is what the barrel edges are, which looks good. But chalk, I think, on that car in the photo, the chalk looks so close to the silver, but not quite, that it feels a little off.
Yeah, it almost looks like they're trying to paint it.
Yeah, you can paint match it from as an option, or you can kind of not match it. I feel like having something close, maybe not the right way to spec your car.
I think black or chalk would have been the way to go. But Mike, everything else about that sounds like a really beautiful spec, especially the chalk on black with the carbon fiber. I feel like that would look the part for sure.
Yeah, I wish I'd gotten a picture of the interior, but it was just kind of a last minute thing that I was able to even get some seat time in it. So I just got in the car and drove it instead. The only thing I wish about the interior is that it had like deviated stitching. You know, if I want to get really into, you know, my $185,000 car, I think I'd want it my way.
Yeah. Now, it's now available for 2022 model year if you want to place your order.
Wow. Well, I've been driving Kyle's Tesla Model 3. I had just gotten it at the last show, and now I've been driving it a lot and also working on it. So I basically had suspension dropped, frunk removed, which actually, when you remove the frunk, there's a lot still under there. Like, my neighbor walked over and like legit thought that was the engine. And I mean, he's like half right, I guess, but
you got all the cooling and the front motor and air conditioning and ventilation. The front trunk is really easy to take out, though. It comes out as like whole thing. It's like four bolts.
Yeah, super easy. It's like it took about 2 hours. Now that I've done it, I could probably do it in like 40 minutes. Just because it was figuring out all the bolts you needed. And the thing that took the longest was the speed sensor wire that goes like basically along the control arm and along the part to get all the way to the wheel. But yeah, once it was replaced, the squeak was gone completely like it should be. And then I went further and took our EV wash kit. And so these are some before pictures, which I showed some earlier, but that doesn't look very white anymore.
There's a lot of wear on that.
That's the it's just dogs. Yeah.
This is the car being used as a tool and nothing else.
Yeah. This is Kyle's heavy use Model 3.
I mean, it's a 90,000 mile Model 3 and it looks like it right now.
Yeah. So now it is effectively detailed. I should have taken a before picture of the trunk. It was basically coated in white dog hair. and now it's like nearly new or about as good as it's going to get.
Oh, wow. That's very
honestly, improved. It's a lot. It's a
that's
lot
an endorsement for the EV wash right there. Looking at that, what are the three bottles I saw? What were the three cleaning solutions they offer?
It was the interior wash and then exterior waterless wash and then window cleaner.
Oh, so perfect. That's what you need.
Literally, yeah. I used it all or not all of it, but probably a good amount of it actually. Should probably order some replacement pouches. But yeah, it's literally his car is looking nearly good as new, I feel like.
So I had and a fun shout out to Drew at Martian Wheels because those wheels look excellent.
Yeah. Very good. I shot I don't think I can share them yet, but I shot new wheels Martian are coming out with for the Plaid. So that was my first experience in a Plaid, and that was, I mean, I feel like Kyle's car is fast, and then I got in the Plaid, and then I got back in Kyle's car, and I was like, this slow little piece of... But, yeah, fun little photo shoot. I really like it. It's just a simple... I mean, it's like a fun appliance. Like, it's still an appliance, but it's really fun to drive. It's plenty quick. I mean, you really don't need anything faster than Performance Model 3. Now we want something fast. Yeah,
you can. I don't know.
You can want faster, but need wise, I am always beating everyone off of every line and getting where I need to go. This is pretty great. Is
coming from the guy that dailies a Miata, though, in most cases, so
that's true.
Camry would feel fast.
Yeah, I could get a Corolla XSE and be like, "Wow, this is blazing."
You got a V8 in here?
No, guys, you don't understand. The Prius is actually really fast.
It's got the hybrid motor in it. Lots of low end.
And I also, I mean, this weekend was like so much car stuff. We had Concours d'Elegance in Denver. So that was a lot of fun. I had a neighborhood car meet too. So that was kind of fun. There's a lot of car enthusiasts in my neighborhood, actually. So that's where I saw a bunch of different Porsches and really old, like vintage stuff. And then some classic American muscle, of course, and just a weird variety of things. But Concours d'Elegance was definitely my highlight. So I arrived in a Tesla Roadster with my friend who owns this. And so it's like bright green. Cool. Very attention getting. Finally saw my first Countach up close.
Wow.
It was pretty interesting. And yeah, very worn, which is cool. Like it's been driven a lot. It had a lot of miles on it.
Yeah, I like that.
I appreciate it. Saw one of these for the first time, the Superleggera DBS Volante.
It's a big name, but I think you nailed it.
Yeah, $350,000 of Aston Martin beauty. It's like five stage paint. It's ridiculous. But it's pretty
Gosh,
that's a nice interior.
I don't know if I'm sold on the quilting there on the seats or the diamond stitch.
But the color though,
color is gorgeous, nice deep brown. But yeah, the quilting just continues. I mean, center rest, the thing on the door card. I mean, they were like, how much quilting would you like? And the person was like, yes. So they just kept quilting. but it was a gorgeous car. I also saw, I've seen these a lot, and they're, everyone criticizes them, but I love the look of the i8 Roadster.
I do too.
I'm just a huge fan. The guy who owned it was kind of interesting. I guess he sold the Roadster to the Tesla Roadster to the guy I came with, and he has the new Roadster in order, and he just complained about Elon the whole time we were there, just like how his car is delayed.
Well, it's been 4 years, so
yeah.
Him and many others are upset. Well,
he bought this car as they like tied me over for like 2 years, and now it's been like four. So he's like, yeah, I'm stuck with an i8 Roadster. I was like, well, there's other options out there.
You could be stuck with worse.
The most interesting vehicle was this Pikes Peak Porsche.
This is about Ben's alley right here.
Yeah, this is powered by effectively 8 Zero motorcycles powertrains. There's 8 ZF motors right there. 4 of the big batteries, which are equal to 8 of the normal batteries. 2 in the front, 2 in the back. It was fascinating. And they're looking to bring it to Pikes Peak next year for the 100th run. So
are they? So they just a bunch of motorcycle batteries and stuff.
And the original transmission. So
that's
what?
Fascinating.
Yeah, that's a 915, I think. It's really there. So they have a
handle that much torque.
I think they have a 935 transmission as a backup plan, and then plan C is like a completely bespoke transmission. But yeah, it's still just a, the original transmission's still running. So they're doing
I don't know if I what. Like, how is that? I don't know if that's a good idea or not.
They didn't either. Like, they put it, they left it in there for testing, and it just hasn't broken yet. It's like, okay.
I wonder how hard they've tested it.
Yeah, but it's cool. They sourced all this from Zero. Like, Zero is helping them build this, which is awesome. They're helping with the software and everything. So it's a fun little joint venture.
That's very neat.
Saw my first RS4. The guy also owned a Carrera GT. And he also owned the Lexus LFA, the first one I've seen. So,
two of my all-time favorite cars, back to back, right there.
Yeah, what a garage! And then some really. This one really too. What is this? Audi Quattro something.
Quattro.
Yeah, just gorgeous, white on white. And then I saw some really weird things I want to show you guys.
Is that a Panos?
Yeah,
I'm jumping ahead.
Panos. Panos Esperante, yeah. I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funky.
There you go, Ben. There's your convertible.
This is Mazda.
I've driven one of these, and they are the weirdest. Is this one a supercharged Ford motor by chance?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess they're all the same then.
So to me, it looks like Mazda RX-7 got with a Ford Thunderbird, like the latest model Thunderbird, and this is what happened.
I always think the back looks like a Miata.
Yeah, definitely NB Miata vibes for sure.
All that wheel fitment, though. and then the Rossion, which is the successor to the Noble. This is one of 95 cars made, I think. It was gorgeous.
I dig that.
And then, of course,
my colleagues actually has a Noble that he's owned for 15 years now. I forget. I think it's the M or the M400, or it's like an older one. Whatever that one was based off, it was the one that he has.
Yeah,
and it's really cool. And he says it's awful to drive in the summer because it has no air conditioning, and the exhaust, you sit right next to it, so you just cook the whole time you're in the car.
Sounds about right. Then I saw Dino. Oh, it's one.
That's beautiful.
One of the most beautiful pieces of styling, I think, in the automotive industry. And then a Saab I'd never heard of before.
Is that a Sonet?
Yes.
I know one fact about these because I nearly bought one and it stuck with me.
Of course you did.
But, what if it's obscure? I'm, for whatever reason, drawn to it. These had a V4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that not an inline four, not a V6, a V4. I don't know why. I just... It's the only other car I've heard with that.
They're very funny.
It's very ugly.
It looks like it could be amphibious.
It does. That's what I thought.
It does look like an amphibious project car. The trunk opens in the weirdest way too. Like you, I think the photo you can see. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's not the most practical like cargo.
I like how two of these completely obscure cars. Ben was like, "Oh, is that a?" And just knew exactly what it was.
And I had to finish with the legend, the M1. That's just it. Beautiful car.
That's it for me.
Yeah, that's the color too.
That's it. That is the build.
This car has 600 miles on it. He owns it and won't drive it.
So I bet that'll sell on Bring a Trailer for $1 million.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
that one's probably like almost a $100,000 car today.
Yeah, yeah. He's like driven ones are going for like 50s, 60s.
I should have taken a picture of the interior, but I couldn't get myself to because it annoyed me so much. He left the blue. Weird translucent plastic on all the metal.
No.
Oh.
No.
If it's been on that long, it's not going to peel off well, and it's just going to make it bigger.
Yeah,
mess
that's true.
The middle of the steering wheel is the BMW logo covered by a blue piece that's actually a square, so the corners are just like flopped up. And I was like, what is going on?
I'm hoping that he gets like the oil changed and fluids changed on it every now and then, but.
Yeah, hopefully. But what a cool car. So, anyways. had to mention that I'm a huge fan of, just car shows. I go to Cars and Coffee all the time, all sorts of car meets, but everyone can show up versus Concours. It's like, at least you have a more unique group of people because you have to pay to get in. So it's not just someone bringing their, Honda Accord that they slap wheels on. Yeah.
Civic SI.
Which happens a lot, but yeah. So
I mean, that's very cool because you got to see, an LFA. I've never seen an LFA in person.
And I heard
super
it.
Super jealous. Yeah. Oh, my God.
The
gosh.
Exhaust.
That so, and the Carrera GT. I mean, if I could buy any car in the world, it'd be a Carrera GT, to be honest. I like it. Ben, I don't think, really cares for those cars too much.
The Carrera GT is very cool, but I just have a 918. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm going to pick my Porsche supercar. I'll go super, I guess.
That yellow.
No, I like that 918 V8. That's a really great. It's like a 9800 RPM V8. It's awesome. You know, 10 cylinders, that's not really a Porsche thing in my world. It's not there. I mean, the history behind the Carrera GT engine is fascinating, but just to burst that BMW 1M guy's bubble. earlier this year, one sold on Bring a Trailer with 4,400 miles, same color, for 75,000. So, I don't know. You could look at inflation and whatnot. I feel like you'd be better off driving it a little more.
Absolutely. You know? That's one of those cars.
You gotta have a 4 mile car or a couple thousand, but like a 300 range, you didn't really do either thing well.
Well, yeah. And he said he's actively looking for another one to drive. Which I respected, because I've met people who bought two Honda S2000s when they came out and kept one in the garage, and so they sold it for much more than they bought it for on Bring a Trailer, and so it was like, I guess they kind of got
for the other one.
Yeah, they got two for the price of one. So I guess that makes sense. It's kind of sad because it's a driver's car, but I don't know.
I think that the rule is, unless it is an incredibly special car, you should probably drive it because chances are you're not even going to beat inflation after like 5-10 years. There's that crazy low mile special edition Corvette Z06 or whatever that sold on Bring a Trailer with like 4 miles on the odometer. Like it was dollied its whole life, never moved anywhere. And that one sold for, I think, basically what it was adjusted for inflation. If you put that same money in like a portfolio or just like, I don't know.
Cars will
a basic like index almost should be doing never, way better.
Yeah, almost never there'll be a better investment than an actual investment. And especially if it's a car as good as like a 1M, drive it. Just drive it.
Well, speaking of terrible investments, Subaru.
Wonderful segue.
Subaru has debuted the 2022 WRX. And I don't know. What do you guys think? I can't. It's hard for me. Like Kyle doesn't care about looks. I care a lot about looks, and it's hard for me to like get past the looks. Like
it's cladding. It's 100% the cladding for me.
Yeah. It just. I don't know. It doesn't look right.
Okay, the white. I've never seen the white. The white makes me completely like it all of a sudden. I hated it in the orange. So,
wow.
I don't know what to say anymore. I think that looks cool. That's a change.
Well, that's the thing. It's not that offensive, but I feel like it's not enough of a departure from the previous one. But I guess they've been so gradual in their updates. But one of the things is like the Honda Accord taillights. I don't know
that's, how it looks like the new BRZ. I actually like the rear end quite a lot. I think it looks really cool. I honestly want to see what it would look like with a wing.
I think that tiny little lip spoiler.
Yeah. I mean, it could be one of those things where I just don't like the dimensions in pictures. I think it maybe could look better in person. But I just like, I'm very opposed. I think it's because of the Crosstrek. I just really don't like the cladding on the Subarus. And that's to me what always made the WRXs and the STIs really cool is because they never had it, where like the Outbacks and the Crosstreks always did. And that kind of made them seem a little bit, I don't know, sportier.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'd really want to see it in person before I make a judgment call on my opinion of the looks. But at a glance, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, I don't think any WRX has ever really looked good. I mean, they've all Subarus kind of always been out there, you know.
That's not what they're known for.
The best generation was probably the Blob Eye. In my eyes, that was one of the better looking Imprezas. This one, I guess they're just following Subaru's design trend with the black cladding. I agree. I think without it, it would look a lot better. At the same time, I don't necessarily hate the overall design. Mm-hmm. I think when you see an STI, they probably will get rid of that black cladding and put a big old wing on the back of it and hopefully do something with the rear diffuser down there. I think it sticks out really far. None of the photos probably really show it well. I saw a photo on Twitter of someone who stacked up a bunch of like Monster energy drinks in the back of it. I was like, oh, we figured out what the bumper's for. Yeah. I was like, I never even realized it stuck out that far.
Jeez. So here's a kind of a mock-up someone did. It's very subtle, but he kind of shrunk the lower rear cladding to make it not quite as tall. He made the spoiler more of like an integrated ducktail, like the Super.
Yeah, he squished other the taillights too.
Yeah. And he lowered it a little. It just did very minor improvements, which I do like more than the other one for the most part, but it's not bad. So I know I'm coming at this from someone who generally just doesn't like Subaru looks anyways. So I understand my bias.
I think the biggest affront to this car is the base infotainment system looks awful.
Yeah.
It looks so bad. Like Honda and Acura could not get that dual screen thing to work, but
nor Subaru could Infiniti still.
Or Infiniti. So I don't know why Subaru brought that into this car instead of just their one screen. I don't know why they needed to add the second. I'm sure you can get the big 12-inch screen on some of the upper trim levels that alleviates that problem. But Subaru, come on, you can do better. You can do better. We know you can do better.
Mike, I am curious. I think that could be where they go with the STI is they remove the cladding and make it look like a whole lot sportier with that. And maybe that would be another reason to get people to upgrade to the STI.
Yeah, I do think that's probably what they're going to do. And I think that'll look a lot better. And honestly, people will just pay to upgrade because I'm sure a loaded version of the WRX is probably within a couple thousand dollars of a base STI at this point anyway. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see whenever they do announce it. I do know that when they upgraded the motor in this car, so now it's a 2.4 liter turbo, they got barely any more horsepower out of it. And I'm assuming that's to kind of protect the STI, the next one that's coming out. A little bit. Otherwise, this would be a 300 horsepower car, which is basically what the STI is right now.
Part of me thinks at this point, with four cylinders getting as powerful as they are, maybe Subaru was a little ahead of the game when they were offering 260, whatever it was, early days horsepower-wise. Because now, like, you think about it, a four-cylinder that makes 300 horsepower, you've got, like, a Porsche Boxster or Cayman, and then, like, everything else is going to be, like, a highly strung 2-liter Jag or something kind of weird like that.
Mini Alfa Romeo JCW.
That's like a really hot horsepower number for a four cylinder. So maybe it's just sort of without getting into unreliable territory.
I'll say that's definitely been Subaru's downfall, is that unreliable territory.
So this is the same engine as the new BRZ in 86, right?
With a turbo on it, I think.
Yeah. With a turbo. So they still have the 6-speed manual, which is great. Or you can get the Subaru Performance Transmission, which is a CVT, but that's the name of the CVT. So
I see what they did there.
Gotta love that, yeah.
I don't know. Subaru just needs to give everybody what they want, cross-track wilderness and throw the turbo motor in it and a manual, and you will never sell a WRX because every single person is going to go out and buy a cross-track version of it.
Especially out here.
Or just bring a hatchback. I think they never will.
Great as a hatchback, but I don't know.
I agree, Ben.
They never will.
I think now's the time for that. I think the enthusiast market for these cars now is in the place where that's cool again, and they could do that without much risk. It's not like they're offering a BMW hatchback. It's a Subaru. People kind of look for that stuff. Yeah. Mazda 3 hatch, I think, has done rather well, I imagine. As a
very good looking too, yeah.
I think it's actually got enough power overall. I feel like it's going to be a fun little car still.
I mean, we can't put too much stock in how they look now because they won't be stock for long after they're sold anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. They didn't have to do any effort.
Yeah, they didn't have to do anything.
Design.
Yeah.
They knew someone was going to buy it and do all that themselves. There's going
to be wide body kits on it anyway and massive wings put on after the fact. And
they knew it was a blank canvas.
Yeah, exactly. They're just giving it to the what you might call an artist with a vape.
Makes sense.
I would have liked to have seen in this some cool use of mild hybrid technology, like give it a little 20 horsepower electric motor or something in there to like boost it up when you're, so you don't have turbo lag or something. I feel like that could have been a way to add a horsepower without making that engine way more highly strung. I know Subaru doesn't have a whole lot of electrification going on because they rely a good bit off of like Toyota's development, I guess, Fuji Heavy Industries or whatever. But still, I think that a little like electric boost button on the steering wheel would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
So we don't know pricing yet. And we also don't know what the STI will be, but this is, it's an update. So I think it needed one. And I'm just happy to see it still has a manual. So I would be really curious to drive this back to back with the previous one, because they say, 75% more rigidity or something like that.
That'll make a good difference.
Yeah, and 28% overall torsional rigidity and 75% increase in suspension mounting point rigidity. So lowering the car's center of gravity. I'd love to like go experience that and see if I even notice. Probably would.
I have driven the older generation WRX and it was fun, but it definitely didn't feel the most taut and direct, I would say. In comparison to Jordan, your Miata or my Fiesta. So I don't know, maybe it could sharpen it up a little bit and make it really nice from the factory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I actually owned a 16 WRX that I bought new, a premium, and brought it out to Tail of the Dragon, and the, really out there, it was fine. Like I thought it did okay. So I think these improvements will help it a lot. It did tend to, feel a little understeery, but it's an all-wheel drive car, so it's going to do that. The biggest complaint on the motor was just it had like a dead spot in power. The very top end, it's like just nothing was there. So that's why most people end up tuning them anyway. So hopefully the tune on this motor from the factory is just a little better overall. But I think the handling updates sound great and definitely overdue, because I believe the chassis of that car was old and now they've moved over to their whole new platform. So it's still exciting, and I'm a Subaru guy. I've owned three of them, so definitely.
Sounds like Subaru is making a shift towards handling, like in a big way, because I've heard great things about how the new 86 handles with that a little bit extra power and just the chassis itself. So maybe they wanted to try to change the reputation of the WRX to be a better handling car.
Well, we have another bit of news that just dropped yesterday. But no one really noticed because it's extremely subtle. Zero, who I'm a huge fan of the brand, just updated their 2022 model year S, DS, and DSR, which are some of their, I guess, older, I don't know what you call it. Like they've had these for quite a while. And they were lagging behind both Zero's, the rest of their lineup, but also the competition. And unfortunately, they still are. So they finally did give it, let's see the last picture. They finally gave it a screen, a full color TFT screen. But that's really the only change, and some other colors, which I, as I was writing this, I went back and forth because I was like, they already look so good. And I don't know how much you can change the styling of a motorcycle. Like, you don't have quite as much to work with as a car. That's true. At the same time, Zero's other newer bikes, which are, I guess, more sporty oriented, look amazing and do look very updated. And they have things like LED lights. These still come with, what, halogen? Is that what it's...
That is an affront on an electric bike.
It is.
On any electric car, that's an affront to have a halogen light.
Yeah, and this... So they haven't changed the design since 2014 at all. Every year it's been a slight variation in color offerings, usually one or two colors per year.
Sounds like Nissan.
Yeah. So yeah, it felt kind of like Nissan, but it's hard because like they're so fun and so good. I'm not that mad, but I was really looking for a DSR improvement versus this is their, where is it? The SRF is like one of my dream bikes. And this is like, I think this looks far more aggressive, far more, I don't know, just mean.
It does look a lot better.
Fun. And like they dressed up the battery, like the other one, it's just kind of, I don't know, in this photo, it looks a little better, but in person, you can just see this like square black box sort of hidden by black plastic cladding. Yeah. So I know they can, but I guess it's R&D, and they are one of the cheapest electric motorcycles in the scheme of things. So you have to give them credit for that, retaining their place at the entry level buyer's market. They're significantly cheaper than the Harley-Davidson and Energica and a bunch of those. So I guess
they're one of the few that has anything off-road ish, you know, dual sporty right now, which is kind of a cool area to have. That's I think the best type of bike in my mind. But
this DSR, that's why I wanted the DSR to be updated, because I want one that is super cool, futuristic looking, but also, you know, it's fully adjustable Showa suspension. I can go full soft on a trail. And I've taken this on many trails, and then you can jump back onto the road and do 0-60 in 3.5 seconds. Like it's a beast everywhere.
Yeah. And they've got, maybe it's one of these models. I thought it was the FX. I don't remember what it was, but there's one model where the batteries are removable and you can take it out and like hot swap them.
Yeah.
I spoke to a gentleman who lived in a apartment, and they didn't have a garage to charge in, and he had a Zero, and that was his computer, and he pulled the battery out every time he got home, bring it up, plug it in, and repeat, which actually was a very interesting way of adding an EV to a kind of typically incompatible living situation.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I think he had two. He might have left one at work plugged in or something. I don't remember the charge time. So he's saying like he charges it at work and he just switches them and alternates.
Yeah, this is the FX. It's their like actual dirt bike. And it has a hot swappable smaller battery, 7.2 kilowatt hour. And it's brilliant. And you can actually, when you order it, you can order like an additional battery. So you can have one to like hot swap. The FXS is the same platform essentially, just for the street, like street tires. Same concept. This one actually has a 3.6. That's what he had.
Yeah, it looks just like this one.
Actually. Yeah, with the empty slot. So you can add in a second one or leave it open, save weight. Like there's options.
That's cool.
That is very neat.
I dig that.
I'm surprised I don't see more of these Zero bikes around. I don't know if I've ever actually seen one in person. It could just be
because I've noticed them. Yeah.
They look like, that's my issue with the DS and the S and the DSR, is they look like so similar to most other motorcycles that people don't notice until, like, I took this to the car meet in my neighborhood, and me pulling up was the only thing that made people realize it was electric, because there was no sound. And then, you know, if you're a motorcyclist, then you can usually look at the exhaust, because a lot of them are like, oh, what exhaust does he have? And it's like, oh, nothing.
Atlas.
It's deleted, yeah.
Go straight out the bottom. Yeah. So I hope they continue to develop their styling. All the rumors were that the DSR was going to be the next update, because like the FXE, which is what I went out to California to see, that was a really cool styling change and took it kind of to the supermoto futuristic.
I dig that.
Yeah, and it's subtle compared to the FXS, but it's just enough to make it look fresh and unique. And I mean, this thing was the coolest thing ever to ride, because it's like less than 300 pounds.
Wow.
But still insanely fast. So this would be great around town. And I just hope the rest of their lineup goes kind of this direction. So we'll see, but it's cool to see what they have done. They've been in this game for 13 years. They have a lot of R&D. That's why they have some of the best powertrains. But I guess where they lack is just styling, because it's fine, I guess. People aren't complaining. Maybe I'm the only one. I don't know.
I mean, I forget how long they've been around, to be honest. I mean, I don't look at motorcycles very mm-hmm. often. I would personally like something like this, I think. I think as like just a commuter, a daily driver, like this makes a lot of sense and probably to a lot of people. And even just the other day, actually, my colleague and I at work were talking about Zero motorcycles and how interesting they are, and that he actually wants to buy one. And this is from, and you know, he's older than I am, and he's super into electric cars, and he really wants to get this electric bike now, because he doesn't live that far from where he works. So it would make a great rider for him, especially because he doesn't need to go on like the highway or any huge major roads for any long stretches of time.
Yeah.
My biggest concern about any motorcycle is just other people around me. But I think it's very cool, and electrification on a motorcycle like this is very smart.
Yeah. So this is the Concept Zero unveiled.
Wow, that's neat.
So cool. It came out a couple of years ago, and they actually showed it at like a, I don't know what it was called, but it was a show with mostly Harleys and like leather, and it was just completely out of the blue.
I love
but
the
everyone, headline. Yeah, everyone was so drawn to it. So that's what they based to make the FXE, and they definitely did some of that, but they couldn't follow it to a T, just because of cost and like safety requirements and everything. But I do like where they're going with it. So we'll see. So one of the rumors was this summer being a new DSR, because they filed the patent for FXE at the same time as they filed a patent for DSX or something like that, which people thought would be just the new version of DSR, but we still haven't seen anything. So we'll see. But on that EV train, there's some updates to the whole GM Bolt EV battery recall, which we actually haven't talked about on this podcast, I don't think. But that's some of the big news in the car industry right now, is the massive recall for Chevy Bolts, which is kind of unfortunately taking a hit on people's reactions to EVs in general. And it's not helping the case of the people who are super concerned about, I don't know, fire or anything like that. Even though most EVs are extremely safe and over-engineered to that regard. But I don't know if you guys have seen much of what the recall, what happened. But I guess, what was the issue? GM first said, don't park in your garage and charge. Like they said, charge outside or something like that.
They did. Well, here's the thing. Now, maybe I've been out of the loop, but I don't recall Bolts catching fire frequently originally. You know, is it something that happened with age, I guess?
Unless yeah, there was just a couple examples, I think.
Yeah, like it I was think, like one-offs, and yeah. Now it's maybe it's just because it's news and it's in the cycle. But it's like how Tesla fires are one-off for the most mm-hmm. part, but they're reported every single time. Maybe it's not that way.
It's that was my least favorite thing when I worked there. Is everybody? These are the cars that catch on fire, right? And I'm like, I mean,
statistically, they're the opposite. But
yeah, hey. it was absurd. Yeah, I think it's definitely one of those things where they did a recall just to be safe. And because they chose to do the recall, now everybody is thinking and very paranoid that their car will catch on fire, and the news just kind of runs with it because fires are exciting, right?
Well, even before the recall, wasn't like the remedy just, oh, don't charge your car to over 90% state of charge or 80% state of charge. And it's the cars that with certain battery packs made between a certain time, like there's a defect in them. That would cause like the breakdown of the pouches in their battery. I'm not too familiar. I'm not too very technical with the battery pack, but
the module in some, and then they're replacing entire packs in others. So, and like the older models are getting all new packs.
Yeah. Imagine your EUV bolt, which you just received, being recalled.
I've heard from some people who are trying to capitalize on this and buy a cheap bolt to have around, that getting them insured with certain insurance companies is a bit of a challenge at the moment, actually, which is definitely something to be aware of. If you're thinking, "Ooh, I spy a deal right now," you may struggle to insure it at the moment, depending on who you're.
Wow, that's an interesting tidbit. The estimated cost $1.8 billion. Replace every single battery.
Every Volt, every older Volt is getting one, and then the newer ones are just getting the module. But it's those, probably those, all of the older Volts.
2017s.
That's really causing the cost to drive up, and that's just so crazy to think about. Because that's the equivalent of swapping drive. It'd be like Dieselgate for Volkswagen almost, where they're swapping drivetrains on so much.
The plus side, a battery swap is a fairly easy task on a vehicle like that, you know?
Yeah, that's true. It's not hard, but expensive.
He's coming at a tough time as well, which is kind of unfortunate in the general car market and global situation with production issues being as, you know, resources are spread thin globally, it feels like. And so that's unfortunate because they are, you know, for as much fun as we can poke at them for the lack of a good charging curve still, like, they're great cars and the people who own them love them. So, you know, they've not made a bad product at all. It's a great product. It's just a little unfortunate. And it seems to be more due to the, you know, it's outside of General Motors control. You know, I think it's more the LG than anything.
Yeah, so there's a couple cases of fires where they investigated and found the issue. And then what caused the full recall was a few more fires that were already double checked happened. And so that was when they were like, okay, we just need to recall everything, which that's a scary decision. Yeah.
Especially, I mean, if that's your only car, like you went out, you chose to buy a Bolt, and to be your daily driver, like you live in an apartment or you live in a house with a garage, and oh, plug it in every night. It'll be super convenient. And now, well, you can't plug it in and don't park it in your house, park it on the street. Don't drive it below 70 miles state of charge. I mean, that's definitely frustrating for the owners of those cars. And I'm sure that there will be some kind of legal action getting put together by some lawyers out there already, I can imagine.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the silver lining I see to this is there is a recall. It's happening. And it's going to get taken care of eventually for everyone. So, you know, at least we do live in a society where that is a thing, and you're not just, oh, well, good luck with your car that catches fire. Go look on the Facebook owners group to learn tips how to not make it explode. You know, could be that way, you know, depending on if regulations went the way some people probably wanted them to go at points.
Yeah. Well, I feel like this is normally not something we would talk about, but I did finally want to bring up Apple's electric car that is almost similar to the Roadster, been talked about for so long, and it's never, at least the Roadster has a, you know, prototype. This still isn't even really confirmed by Apple. although, you know, everything's public as far as who they're hiring, and they have people on their team to make an autonomous vehicle. So it's all but confirmed, you could say. But I would be curious to see, you know, how they would feel in this realm, because I mean, it's not exactly car related, but Apple tends to not be first to the game for a lot of things, but they tend to be really good when they get there. And so it's almost like they let other people put out certain features or even a type of device, see what went wrong and address that and fix that, and then sell really well. So it's interesting that we have this huge EV push. So many companies are coming out with EVs. Everyone either has one or plans for one. And then Apple's watching all of that unfold. And they're watching other companies that haven't made cars before, which would be Apple, just to see how they're tackling various things and seeing. It's almost, I feel like they're just like watching and learning while simultaneously developing, which is honestly not a bad way to do it. But I don't know if you guys have seen anything about the Apple car. There's really nothing to say. There's no.
I have. I don't think. And I know there's been so much speculation and rumor. I don't really understand why Apple would make a car. So I have like a lot of doubt about this still. Because one, they don't have a distribution and service network that applies to it. So they're going to have to do that. So there's this huge capital investment to like get to this point. It's literally starting a car company. The only difference is you have a trademark at this point.
Yeah, so that's exactly what I was thinking.
It doesn't really make sense for a company that profitable to get into a industry relatively low margins overall and that has huge costs of R&D. Part of me thinks that the more likely thing is they're going to just be developing like in-car technology systems or something that they want to sell to, say, Kia and Hyundai. And instead of Apple CarPlay, you have Apple Car OS or something. That and maybe they want to get self-drive or something. That could be a thing, but I don't even know if I see them investing in that super, super heavily.
Yeah, it's funny. It says
machine learning is more useful for them than self-driving technology is.
And that's what they could do. Like the Sony car, the Sony concept that they put out at CES or whatever it's called.
CES.
Yeah, not CCS. Sony did that, but they have no plans to make a car. But it was a showcase of like A, design, and B, some of the technology. And honestly, that's probably the route they'll go, is they'll just keep producing technology, which they already make cameras, like audio systems. They have their hands in a lot of places. And I would assume Apple could do the same thing. They have a lot of good hardware. It's hard to say what they would do. It's annoying that all these Apple articles have these renders, because this is hideous and this is not what it would look like in the slightest. And it's so annoying that they have, I don't know, people, I guess it's fun. People have fun making renders. But what brought it back to the news is that Apple has been in talks with Hyundai and Toyota in the past, or maybe it was Kia.
Oh, and Magna.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Various Magna companies. Magna
produces a lot of car. They're basically, you know, like Jaguar builds the I-Pace through Magna instead of having it done in their own dedicated factory. They would do a lot of manufacturing for companies.
But it says that would make more sense for them.
That's interesting.
All these manufacturers were not interested in the project.
I mean, I can imagine Apple would be hard to work with.
So Apple's now doing it on their own in their own way, and instead just poaching people from other companies, which, you know, we all expected Apple to do it their own way. And I'd like to say and poke fun that they would like have their own proprietary car lightning connector, but Tesla already kind of beat them to the proprietary connector thing. So I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of don't see why the world's most profitable and valuable company would get into an industry, like Ben said, that historically is very difficult to start up. I mean, you go into hundreds of millions of dollars of debt, if not billions of dollars to that, just to try and get it off the ground, get your car through safety, build the prototype, get it certified. I mean, I picture it more along the lines in the software realm, kind of like, you know, Android has their operating system in the new Polestars and Volvos. You might be able to see some Apple software in cars coming out. I think that would be really smart to do. As a consumer, I would rather have, you know, someone who makes phones and phone OSs make the whole OS of a car, because they actually know what they're doing, instead of a manufacturer like Volkswagen, for instance, who has 1,700 departments all working on should this button be here? What should the shape of this button be? So I think Apple would be better off in that sense. But the fact, like Jordan, you had mentioned that they've poached all these like AI and Tesla engineers for full self-driving and things like that and autopilot is definitely interesting. Maybe they'll release some kind of version of their full self-driving you can add to a car or something.
Now, I imagine like the computer vision knowledge and the machine learning and AI, like there's a lot of overlap. So I wonder how much of that they're hiring the people for their automotive experiences versus they're hiring those people because they're very good with machine learning and computer vision technology. And, you know, with Apple, that has a million applications. I only think that, like, if I was Apple, the only reason I'd want to get into people's cars is to gain more...
Collect more data.
Collect more data. I mean, that's really how I view it. Like, what do we have to gain from it? You know, they have the phone, but what if we are controlling how they interact and how they purchase and how they listen and watch in a car? And, you know, yeah. I think it's just like they have this ecosystem they want you to be in because the deeper you are into it, the more... product that they can provide you and the more valuable you become as an asset to them when it comes to advertising partners or for advertising their own programs and products.
I mean, you never know though. Apple does have plenty of money on hand. They might just surprise us all and release a car before Tesla puts a Roadster out or a Cybertruck. So we'll see.
That would be funny. I wonder what Apple's new car smell would be. Cause you know, Apple products have a smell.
And they all do. I was just going to say that.
It was engineered that way. In fact, this company put out a candle to smell like it, which is funny because a lot of people who actually work in Apple supply chains were blind tested and couldn't tell the difference between the candle and an actual like opening of a MacBook.
Wow.
So that was kind of cool. And random tidbit, because our next topic, so we have just a couple minutes left, but I'm going to rapid fire a couple things that I thought were just funny and I threw them on there. Nissan has dedicated odor engineers to work on new car smell. I think this is great. This is an article no one's going to talk about. But so now that I'm reviewing cars and like getting press cars, something I'm learning is that every manufacturer really does have their own smell. And it's very specific. Yes. Like I can get in a Volvo blind and be like, this is not a Honda. Like they're all. So it's just kind of interesting that, you know, it's something that takes engineering. It's not just like it comes out of the factory this way.
All older Volkswagen smelled like crayons. So, I mean, I had to have been on purpose, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just thought this was really funny. And
as long as they don't engineer C7 Corvette odor, then we're fine. I don't like the smell of those cars.
No Corvette smell, please.
Yeah. And then lastly, there's been some delays on the Bronco, and apparently Ford dealers Ford suggests that dealers buy booze for unhappy Bronco buyers, which is hilarious.
I think that's the right target market for that, honestly.
It's like, you're mad? Here's a fifth of Jack D.
Here's some brandy, and we'll see you next week. Yeah.
Got to pack a highlight.
The same colleague who was thinking about buying or looking at the Zero, his wife, he ordered a Bronco for his wife and it's been all delayed. And they just sent him like a little Bronco, like diecast, like a pretty good, decent size one as a thank you for being so patient with us.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I told him he needs to get his Glenn Levitt or something.
Sounds like there's $1,000 fund that dealers can use to buy gifts for Bronco customers. So
Is it $1,000 per dealer, I imagine?
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, per customer? Man, that would be
like,
cool.
Wow, that's some goodies right there.
That's a lot of booze.
That's a nice bottle of
You're going to forget you ever ordered a Bronco.
Yeah, so that's a bummer. I imagine a lot of it is from the roof delays. Like they had issues with paint on their hard tops. Mm. So that's what I'm kind of assuming happened. But
I'm sure a lot of people ordered the hardtop and now they're all recalled or on delay. So the only Broncos you ever see in the wild are the soft top ones. So if you want your Bronco before your neighbor, just get a soft top.
Just get a soft top, man.
Yeah, they're all regretting it. Well, yeah, thanks everyone for great show tuning in. We are on both YouTube and all the audio podcasts. So if you want to see the visuals we're talking about, definitely check us out on YouTube. And thanks again to our sponsor, EV Wash. And again, that code for 30% off is OutOfSpec30 with capital O, capital O, capital S. And be sure to get that. And they plant trees for products sold. Gotta love it. So thanks again for joining us. Our Twitter and everything is OutOfSpec. My Twitter is Jordan_Schieffer. Then we have Mike at M_Breeling. Ben, Benji_OOS. And lastly, Austin on Instagram at Flywheel Films. Take care.